You know, recommendations can be great. Maybe someone recommended this podcast, and here you are. But home projects are different. If a podcast isn't your thing, you lose a few minutes. If you hire your cousin's neighbor to mount your TV, you might end up with a lopsided screen and wall damage. Maybe I know a guy just isn't enough for your home. That's why Thumbtack works. It matches you with top-rated local pros with photos, reviews, and credentials all in one place. For your next home project, try Thumbtack. Hire the right pro today.
Evening. Buyer's remorse. Buy a new car? I'll be moving in. Let's get started.
Sorry, I think there's been a mistake. I bought it from Carvana.
You what?
Yeah, great price. I even have 7 days to love it or return it.
So there's no...
No buyer's remorse. More like buyer's rejoice.
I guess I'll let myself out. Congratulations. I mean it.
Buyers rejoice. Buy your car today on Carvana.
Limitations and exclusions may apply. See our 7-day return policy at Carvana.com.
The first few weeks back at school set the tone for the entire year. But with new teachers, schedules, and expectations, it can feel like a lot. If you're looking to help your child start strong and stay confident, I've been using IXL to make that transition so much easier. IXL is an award-winning online learning platform that helps kids truly understand what they're learning. Whether they're building math confidence, strengthening reading and writing skills, or reviewing science concepts, from pre-K through 12th grade, it adapts to each child's level and pace, making it easy to spot and close learning gaps in just a few minutes a day before those gaps can snowball. Plus, it's trusted nationwide. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL, and it's used in 96 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. It's an easy, cost-effective way to get kids back into a learning routine and walking into class feeling ready and reassured. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. Listeners can get an exclusive 20% off an IXL membership when they sign up today at IXLlearning.com/audio. Visit IXLlearning.com/audio to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
What's going on, guys? Matt Harmon here. Unbelievable. James and I finished taping around 2 o'clock, and of course, not but 30-ish minutes later, we get news that there's a wide receiver trade that James and I did not discuss on the show. Classic stuff. So I'm here with a topper before we jump to the big show with James here on the Kayshon Boutte trade going to the Texans from the New England Patriots, exchanging Jalen Reed and a 2028 seventh round draft pick. Yeah. Not a lot of compensation for Kayshon Boutte here on this one. And I think that is a little instructive for our expectations here. You know, Kayshon Boutte made some big plays for a Patriots team that a lot of people watched, and they went to the Super Bowl. I'm not going to say he's like an overrated player or anything like that, but I mean, this is a guy who's a number 3 receiver, I think, in the NFL. Solid player. And actually, by the way, I think someone who can be more useful for the Texans in what's likely to be his role there than what he was as this kind of vertical, sacrificial X receiver for the New England Patriots last season. Kayshon Boutte took just 8.9% of his snaps from the slot last season. That is crazy low. And this is just in the regular season last year for the New England Patriots. I mean, that is 6th lowest among any wide receiver last year. The guys lower than him, Ty Felton, who had 43 snaps. Tay Martin, Washington Commanders, 29 snaps. George Pickens, 908 snaps, 7.6%. Okay, we've talked about this. George Pickens, historically low slot percentage for him. Kyle Williams, 8.8%. New England Patriots teammate with Kayshon Boutte. Keandre Lambert-Smith, and then Kayshon Boutte. All right, there are only 7 guys who had a slot rate lower than 10% last year. Boutte is one of those 7 guys. The 7th, by the way, is Rashad Bateman from the Baltimore Ravens. So those are pretty much just like your sacrificial X receivers, except George Pickens, who's unbelievable. Okay, so I think that there's a chance that Boutte he's almost certainly going to play more Z receiver for the Texans than he would have for the New England Patriots, at least what he did last year. And I think based on Boutte's college charting, I did write him up as a prospect. I thought he fit more as like a Z slot type of player in the NFL. Wasn't a prospect I was incredibly high on. I had him as a day three player. He went in day three. I think he can be useful in that Z slot role for this team. Of course, I am always super interested if we ever see Nico Collins moved more around the formation, used as more an off-ball player in motion the whole deal rather than just stuck at just the X receiver spot. And of course, I am still interested in that. You know, that being said, I've at least heard that they're not super interested in moving him away from that X receiver position. They kind of want him just focused on that role, not overloading him the whole deal. You know, you can think what you want about that, but that just kind of, that's where they're at. That's where we're at with that one. So again, I think that we'll see if that means Booty's going to play Z. I do think he'll be better, like more useful in that role. And honestly, I mean, the reality of what we saw with Kayshon Booty last season, this is not a guy who's going to be a high-volume player if he continues to play as just a pure boundary option. I mean, Kayshon Booty was targeted on 12% of his routes last year. Again, a flanker position could help that bump up. Using him as a Z, we could see that bump up, but he's not a guy that is a high, high target player, at least based on what we've seen so far. I obviously have not completed his reception perception profile just yet. He will be among the next group that I drop, so I might change my opinion on some of this if he turns in like an outrageously good rest of the sample. But what I've got so far is, like, I think he's good hands, strong at the catch point, you know, just not a consistent separator necessarily. But again, I'm open to the fact that he can be more useful at Z. And the reality is, like, the Texans basically give up nothing for him. This trade makes all the sense in the world for them. And I still think that Jalen Knoll is more likely to be like the second receiver in terms of like a threat on the team, is my guess. I still remain really high on Jalen Knoll, even if he's not going to be the Z in two receiver sets. I think he ultimately will be really involved in this offense, a good player. I'm still really confident in Jalen Knoll having a nice second season. Whether he's a big time fantasy pick, it's a whole nother discussion. On the Patriots side of things, I think this is interesting because last year, the Patriots, like I said, ran out Kayshon Booty as their X receiver. This year, they added two guys who last season were primary X's, A.J. Brown and Romeo Doubs. Based on camp reports, it sounds like those guys are going to kind of move around a little bit, but A.J. Brown, mostly X. Romeo Doubs, maybe the off-ball big slot option. That's pretty interesting. DeMario Douglas might be their third receiver and get more snaps than he did last year. He was really productive on a per-route basis, but never was a full-time player, so that's pretty interesting as well. Kyle Williams has definitely made plays in the preseason. It seems like nobody's excited about him in practice based on beat reports, but then he gets out in the games and he just makes big plays every single time. I think they should get Kyle Williams a little bit more involved, but maybe this Kayshon Booty trade shows that that will happen. Kyle Williams had one of the most sacrificial X receiver profiles I've ever charted from his rookie season. So perhaps he can be that designated X in three receiver sets, and then Brown and Doubs move around a little bit. A lot going on here with this trade. Probably deserves more of a full scale discussion, and maybe we will have that at a different point. But for now, that's kind of my instant reaction to this Texans Patriots swap with Kayshon Booty here. The Texans definitely needed somebody else in the mix here after losing Jaden Higgins, which remains a really big blow to this team and what they were hoping to be this year. And my analysis on Knoll still being a solid player for them, and Nico Collins absolutely going to go crazy this year from a targets perspective if he can stay healthy, that totally stands here. And just really fascinating to see what that Patriots receiver room. They're one of the more interesting big reveals from week one in terms of how they line all these guys up and everything that we see from them. So, all right, those are my takes quickly on the Kayshon Booty trade. Let's throw it to me and James for the rest of the show here as we head into a big week for Reception Perception.
We've got our take cannons loaded and ready.
Ready.
Absolutely dominant on deep routes. Absolutely dominant on short routes.
The boys are back, baby.
Excellent separation against man coverage.
This is Reception Perception, the show.
Yo, what's cracking, everybody? James Coe, Matt Harmon here with you. You're listening to Reception Perception, the show. All right, Matt, you got lucky. You had an entire week off away from me, pal. But we're back, baby. We are back.
I would not say that I was lucky whatsoever, James. You were missed. Okay. I mean, if there's clearly anything that we learned in the week that you are away, yes. You know, having someone who's a true captain of the ship as you are, you know, hours and hours, thousands and hundreds of thousands of hours of hosting shows, you know, that's a skill set that might be needed on this particular program, especially when it comes to someone's budgeting of the time, because we had two monstrous episodes in which I kept guests much longer than I promised them. But, you know, some of it my fault, some of it the news's fault. It is what it is.
100%. As I was editing the your Dwayne McFarlane Heed the Call pod, I'm like, wait, hold up, dude. Why?
When does it stop?
What is this? Two different episodes? What's going on? No, it's just one. Okay. All right. But you did have a ton of ground to cover for sure. Not as much ground here today, but I tell you what, man, really interested because new wide receiver profiles have dropped. We got CeeDee Lamb, Chris Godwin, Trey Tucker. I think I'm missing one other one. Who else we got in that mix?
Keenan Allen.
Keenan Allen, of course. Keenan Allen. I have not asked you about this, but if I could very quickly, and I know you talked about it in a previous episode, but what are your thoughts here on Keenan Allen potentially blocking Josh Downs?
You know, I actually think going back and watching Keenan last year with the Chargers, because I had started the profile, started the charting when I talked to Dwayne, and obviously, you know, I had already charted QJ, I'd already charted Ladd McConkey at that point, but, you know, really going back and watching Keenan, I've actually came away feeling even better about the fact that, you know, they're going to really need Josh Downs this year, and I think the two don't really overlap as much, because last year Keenan basically played almost primarily as a Z receiver instead of as a slot receiver. He was in the slot for only about 35% of his snaps. It was the lowest in terms of a reception perception sample since his 2015 season. Really the first time again that we've seen him as that primary Z receiver for a team. And he basically only came on the field for 11 personnel snaps. I mean, he took this, I thought was crazy. I didn't look this up until I was doing his profile. Keenan took just 12 total snaps last year out of 12, 13, 21, or 22 personnel. And wow. The guys, I mean, Keandre Lambert-Smith, 45 snaps. Darius Davis, 32 snaps more than Keenan Allen. So I think at this point, there's almost no way that we'll see Allen on the field for those kind of two receiver looks. He'll basically be what he was last year, which is kind of a designated third down 11 personnel spread look receiver for this team. I mean, this was crazy too. Keenan Allen led all wide receivers in receptions on third down last season, which is pretty crazy considering that he did not play. Wow. He was not a full-time player, but that was just who he was for this team last year with Los Angeles Chargers. You know, another year older now, he's got to be one of, if not the oldest receivers I've ever charted for reception perception, which is still pretty crazy that he came in with a success rate versus man over 70%. Really shows the ability of what it means to be like a great, truly elite route runner, which obviously Keenan Allen is. But, you know, I think the fact that what we saw a lot last year when Allen was the off-ball Z receiver, Ladd McConkey, the on-ball slot receiver, and those two guys worked in really good route combinations. They tried to get Ladd McConkey, like set him up for these big breaking out routes, dig routes, and stuff like that, working in combination with Keenan Allen. Obviously, the Chargers offensive line just didn't cooperate, didn't hold up long enough for those routes to develop. I think the Colts offensive line will hold up a little bit for Josh Downs to develop. And they're going to need him to be that guy. Like, they can't run, especially with Alec Pierce being banged up. This is what I talk about with Dwayne. Like, If Josh Downs doesn't have the season that I think he can have, you know, based on RP and based on the fact that like he wins on these intermediate and downfield routes, the Colts offense is screwed. That's just the reality of the situation. Like they need it. It's beyond the fact of like, oh, I hope it happens for Josh Downs. They need it to happen for Josh Downs.
All right, we're going to find out. I like it. Big news from Sunday was the fact that Ashton Jeanty got hurt in practice. It was a non-contact, get carted off, and there was a prayer circle. People thought this was going to be a season-ending injury. It ends up being an ankle sprain, and the Raiders are anticipating him to be back relatively soon. I don't totally have a timeline there, but I thought it was a good opportunity, though, Matt, to remind the listeners and to remind the folks that we do have running back charting on receptionperception.com. And Mike Washington Jr. has a full-on profile here as well. Spent a lot of time this offseason charting a lot of these prospects. Mark Washington, to me, was one of the was a really interesting one. Obviously, the athletic profile jumps off the page. He's 223, 4'3", 340, had a 39-inch vertical. But I would say, and I wrote this in my piece, was I thought it was a little bit of a strange pairing because I think that they're going to run a lot of outside zone there under Kubiak. And Mike Washington was really kind of sort of like an inside hammer for Arkansas. So will he take on that Charbonnet role? It kind of sort of feels that way. And obviously he had a really huge run in the preseason, which, by the way, was between the tackles as well.
He's had a few.
The outside. Yeah, he's had a few. He's looked really, really good. And it has made me kind of, I don't know, re-examine what I think the Clint Kubiak offense might look like here in 2025 or 2026, rather.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this offense is always kind of a little bit of a moving target in terms of what they want to be. It's funny you mentioned that you think he might be like a Charbonnet type. I've been kind of wondering if essentially Ashton Jeanty is going to be kind of a, you know, generational wealth man's version of Zach Charbonnet, hopefully, for this team. And then Mike Washington was going to be like a poor man's Kenneth Walker for this team. Because if you think about it, like, obviously, we know that the Seahawks, you basically used those guys in tandem last year, but they wanted to really use Zach Charbonnet on long, you know, short yardage situations, critical, like let's get move the chains, high success rate runs, like churn things out. And then Kenneth Walker was the guy that they turned to looking for explosive plays. So obviously it's a tortured and imperfect analogy. I totally recognize that. but I mean, I just, that was kind of my initial thought of it as Mike Washington got steamed up the board. And yeah, he's one of the biggest risers at the running back position in terms of Yahoo ADP the last couple of, or just the last week. And I mean, shoot, when it seemed like last night that Ashton Jeanty had suffered a really, really serious injury, I'm sure anybody who drafted on Sunday night watched Mike Washington go way too high that they might have, you know, mistakes might have been made on those Sunday night drafts in terms of the Mike Washington stuff. But yeah, I mean, I think he's a really interesting player. He's looked the part in the preseason. And I just wonder, you know, remember back at the NFL scouting combine, Clint Kubiak, there was kind of a, I saw Coach Speak Index put it out. Of course, Greg is on top of basically everything that comes out of a coach's mouth during, before, after the NFL season, the whole deal. And it was almost like, it looked like a little hostage video for Kubiak because he was in a poorly lit room. You know, it's the combine, so maybe he was out late at night. Who knows? I don't know what Clint's getting up to, but you know, he basically was giving an interview saying he really wanted to have a two-back system. You know, he believes in having the two-back system. And you know, at the time, people freaked out about, does that mean somebody's going to be drafted here to, you know, not usurp, but like really eat into Jeanty's workload. And it's kind of, they drafted an interesting player, Mike Washington. People just kind of forgot about that. I'm not saying it's going to be a split backfield here between these two guys, but I do at least wonder like how much Mike Washington eats into the workload here for Ashton Jeanty, especially now that he's going to maybe miss a couple of games to start the season, depending on the severity of this injury.
Yeah. By the way, side story here. You talk about the Sunday night drafts. I was in an industry auction draft last night. I mean, it was a bunch of, you know, former Yahoo guys in there, man. It's all industry people. Alfredo Brown was in this draft. And the Jeanty news, I'm telling you, broke maybe 5 minutes before the draft started. And the first two guys to be nominated in the auction draft were Ashton Jeanty and Mike Washington.
Who nominated them? I gotta know.
I'm not sure. Drew Davenport, who is like, you know, an auction, you know, god, Guru, was in there too. Yeah, so he was in there too, man. But it's funny, man. It just is
Scott Pianowski's in that draft, right?
Yes, right. Scott Pianowski was in
that draft. Yeah, because I was recording with Scott not but like 5 minutes before. He was on there with me when that news broke. So I was like, I wondered if Scott was one of the ones who did
it. Yes, he was. He was. I think it was Scott then. No, I don't know, man. It just is funny, bro. Anyways, it's just funny because these guys are just stone cold. You know, it's like, yeah, we have no one has any information. We're not going to even allow the information to come out. We're just going to nominate these guys and just see what happens. So, yeah, it was really it was interesting to say the least. Anyways, My thoughts on Mike Washington, if you want to go read the profile, receptionperception.com. I think he's going to be kind of an in-between-the-tackles hammer. Ginty will be the outside flowing guy. And I don't know. We'll see. So interesting profile, to say the least. Anyways, go read it. Go find it. We got a couple more here.
Baseball fans, think you know who's hitting a homer today? Well, FanDuel is giving you a free chance to call your shot with daily dingers. Joining the action is easy. Just make your free pick on who's hitting a home run in their game, and if you're right, you'll get a profit boost to use on your next bet for a chance at extra winnings. You've got nothing to lose and a lot to gain. And don't forget, you can make a free pick every day during the MLB season. It's just another reason why FanDuel is the home for home runs. So, are you ready to play your game today? Join all the action at FanDuel.com/podcast. That's FanDuel.com/podcast to play daily dingers and make your free pick on who's hitting a homer. Play ball and swing for the fences on FanDuel, an official partner of the MLB.
Must be 21 plus and present in Ohio. First online real money wager only. $5 first deposit required. A bonus issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire 7 days after receipt. Restrictions apply. See terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Tastes have changed since Bob's Discount Furniture opened its first store in 1991, but not the way they do business. At Bob's, I know I can get today's styles, like feature-packed bedroom sets with storage and charging, or real marble dining sets, all at 90s-era prices. Plus, with no money down financing options and fast shipping, you don't have to wait months to get your furniture. So, stop into your local Bob's store this Labor Day weekend and celebrate 35 years of doing things the Bob's way.
Actually, before we get into the Godwin Trey Tucker profile, I wanted to get your thoughts here on Deshaun Watson being officially named starter, because I have an interesting thought, conspiracy theory type of situation here with Deshaun Watson. But what are your thoughts on him being named the starter and its impact potentially on KCC and Denzel Boston?
Do you want to talk about this from like a football perspective or like a team building perspective first? Which one do you want to handle first?
You would hope that those two things go hand in hand, but
no, they definitely don't.
I know. I don't think they do either. Give it to me from a football perspective.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, number one, I mean, to kind of dovetail the two topics together, I don't think Deshaun Watson is going to be starting for very long. So for the first couple of weeks, however many games that he starts, I mean, this is a guy that just absolutely has shown zero ability to push the ball down the football field since he's become a Cleveland Brown. I mean, he is statistically one of the worst quarterbacks just across the board, you know, but I think it's been particularly bad in terms of him being willing and able to push the football down the field. That is, remember when Deshaun Watson came into the NFL, remember he had that kind of pathetic showing in terms of the miles per hour on the radar gun or whatever. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if that means anything now all these years later, but you know, this is a guy that's playing in poor weather, you know, the whole deal, whatever. He's never been a downfield passer with the Cleveland Browns. That's never been a part of his. Even the first year that he was with the Browns and he missed all that time at the beginning, you know, remember Jacoby Brissett started, and Brissett would just do exactly what he did with the Arizona Cardinals last year, which is look down the barrel off play action and rip it, you know, to all these guys. I mean, even then Jameis Winston, same thing when he got into the mix for the Cleveland Browns off play action, you know. At that time it was Jerry Jeudy. With Brissett, it was Amari Cooper. You know, I think that's kind of obviously it's a different offensive system now with Todd Monken, but I can't imagine that Watson is suddenly going to reverse course based on what we saw in the preseason against like the freaking Bills backups this weekend. I can't imagine that's going to change. So long story short, I'm expecting a ton of Mickey Mouse, you know, designer stuff, short area touches to KC Concepcion. And I thought it was really telling over the weekend where the Cleveland Browns, I think, wanted to get a fair evaluation of Shedeur Sanders. So they played Denzel Boston in the preseason. Like, let's give this guy at least one quality option to throw to. But KC, they put him on ice, you know, with the rest of the starters, with the rest of the proven guys on the roster. And, you know, I thought that was really telling that Todd Monken basically saw one preseason game of KC Concepcion, came right out of that game. He was like, we got to get this guy the football as much as possible. Monken loves this guy. He was so gassed up to draft him in the first round. I think he's going to get a ton of work, and we're going to kind of be fighting what you remember when Zay, honestly, when Zay Flowers was a rookie, right? He was used on a ton of designer underneath stuff, and people were like, oh, this guy's like a gadget receiver. It's like, no, 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 watch him run real deal routes. I think we're going to be doing the same thing with the gadgety usage that KC Concepcion is about to get this year.
All right, there you go. All right, so that was from the football perspective. You were saying that it's different than the team building perspective. What's the thoughts there?
Well, I mean, look, this is ridiculous that they're starting this guy. It's crazy. I mean, it's the ultimate sunk cost fallacy thing. He goes out there. He goes out there and has a presser that it's like the self-awareness of a potato dog. Like, what are we doing here with the Deshaun Watson presser? It's so, so bad. I think it's pretty simple. I mean, I don't know what your conspiracy theory is. I'm interested to hear it, but I think it's pretty simple. Like, this is what they wanted to do all along. They wanted to start him in week one. Remember, right after the NFL draft, like, Cleveland reporters start leaking out, oh no, we want to see another, they're going to see another look at Deshaun Watson. He's going to probably start week one. So they wanted to do this all along because of the money. I also think it is easier to go from Watson to Shador and not vice versa, right? Like, if you don't start Watson week one, it's over with Watson. And we know they can't cut him anyways. And also, and again, I just talked about this with Mark and Dan from the Heed the Call podcast last week. None of us can. I think we're all realistic about what Shador is. There's not, like, he's not so good that he just, like, we made it so clear all offseason that he needed to be the guy. The practice reports are pretty mixed. So I think he was relatively impressive, you know, based on expectations for Shador. He was relatively impressive in the preseason week one game, but I just don't think that was enough to really change what obviously they wanted to do all along.
So my conspiracy theory, Matt, is it kind of works with what you were talking about. And you've got some of the major points there is that, listen, I don't think that Deshaun Watson is long for the starting post, right? And I do think that the ownership wanted Deshaun Watson to kind of sort of get in there, sunk cost fallacy be damned. All right.
Totally.
That being said, this is an older coach in Todd Monken who waited a million years to get the head coaching gig. He is not going to just go in there and say, hey, listen, Deshaun Watson's not the guy, so dude, let me just run this team the way I want to run it. Like, he's going to play politics, right?
Sure.
And the best way for him to do that is what? I think he looked at everything and was like, yeah, man, we probably got to get a good look here at Shador. But to your point, if we run Shador out there first and he absolutely stinks up the joint, people are going to be clamoring for Deshaun Watson. If you do it the opposite way, the exact opposite is true, right?
Yeah. So sure gets I to be think the hero. Against all odds.
Everyone loves the backup quarterback when your starting quarterback absolutely stinks, right? So, and that is what we're all anticipating Deshaun Watson absolutely stink up the joint. Okay. But like I said, I think it's a political play by Monken because I think he wants to still stay in the good graces of ownership, but also still wants to have a good competitive football team. And this is the best way to go about doing that. I think this is like a chess move where he's like thinking like, you know, 2-3 steps ahead and trying to get ahead of it. Cause I think he wants to get Shador out there and thinks that Shador maybe gives him the best chance to win, but then at the same time needs to navigate a pretty tricky ownership situation and their relationship with Deshaun Watson. So that's my conspiracy theory on the whole ordering of things and the quarterback situation there for Cleveland.
I think you're right. I think there's probably at least a part of Todd Monken that considered that variable, especially because, you know, it's not a secret that people think he might be like a one and done sacrificial lamb type of hire here for the Cleveland Browns. And then they get a new coach quarterback combination in 2027. So, yeah, why not start off in your first game already on the owner's, you know, S list, right?
Yeah. Right.
By the way, Watson said, oh, I've got 17 road games because of the home crowd in Cleveland. They booed him and all that stuff. Well, they do start off with two road games. So you don't even have to start him in front of the home crowd. They start off with a road game against the Jaguars in week one. Week two, they go to Tampa Bay, play the Buccaneers. So my prediction is that, I mean, honestly, my prediction yesterday was I don't think he ever plays a game for this team again. But I mean, so that I'm already 0-1 on Browns predictions with the quarterback. But I'll go ahead and say week three, home against the Carolina Panthers, that's the first time we see Shador start a game because Watson does not play well in the first 2 weeks, especially against, I mean, a defense in Jacksonville that played well last year. Anthony Campanelli had those boys cooking. And then Tampa Bay, obviously Todd Bowles puts good quarterbacks in a bit of a tough spot with his defensive scheme. You're going to put a bad quarterback in Deshaun Watson in a tough spot with his defensive scheme there as well. So, yeah, I think we end up seeing – We ended up seeing Shador in week three. And by the way, just real quick note on all this. Isn't it insane that not just us, we haven't said his name one time. We didn't say his name one time, I don't think, in like a serious what about this guy situation with the Heed the Call boys last week. And I mean, my God, I don't think any Cleveland reporter talked about him as a serious contender for this job. The 94th overall selection in last year's draft was Dylan Gabriel. And just not even a peep in terms like a quarterback competition that neither guy really did much to win. Like neither one of them really wanted to push for it. Yeah, I'm sure he did. I mean, I've been thinking like I've been skipping a step ahead and saying, when is Taylen Green going to get one start for this team? And just to see what they got there. And again, they took this guy 94th overall in last year's draft. He's just literally not. This is the thing when you have a quarterback need. So you just kind of throw a guy in there in the third round, you can just light that pick on fire so fast. And I think it obviously was a little bit cursed that they even then took Shador afterwards, because I think we all agree on field Shador is a flawed player but a better prospect than Dylan Gabriel. Like this is on my radar with like Carson Beck and the damn Cardinals. Even if I'm Cardinals curious this year, you know, if he gets a couple of starts at the end of the year, they still take a quarterback. It's like, what was the point of that pick?
Yeah, it's a good point. I don't know. I don't get it. I mean, they're trying to find lightning in a bottle, but when you try to do that in the third round, that's pretty tough, dude. So I don't know, man. Yeah. My prediction is that Shador will start the second half of week three. I think that they're going to let Deshaun really, truly just run him into the ground, man. Just like let the home crowd boo him, have him have a couple of first half interceptions, and then just bring in Shador and just see what happens. Hey, dude, before we move on, dude, speaking of Shador, like, did you see the interview that he had with Aditi Kinkabwala?
I saw people talking about it. I didn't watch it because I couldn't really care less. But what was it about?
I just wanted to get your thoughts. Like, he seemed like he was high. Like, and that's not good. Like, I'm telling you, like, he was, I don't know what it was. Dude, he just seemed like he was on something, bro. Like, it was just bizarre. I would just say go watch the video just because of that aspect. Not because he said anything of any importance at all.
It was just odd.
It's just so weird and so bizarre.
Well, can I tell you, as somebody that has talked to Shador a couple of times in real life, yeah, he's been an odd cat. Yeah, I mean, he's a weird dude. Like, I mean, it's just, I think, again, he's a solid quarterback prospect that people just let, people overhyped, obviously, but then let him fall way too far, you know, in the NFL draft. I think there's obviously some reasons for that. He's just a bit of he's a different dude, you know,
Yeah. For sure. So. Okay, let's get to some of these profiles here. get to the real stuff, man, for God's sakes. Chris Godwin had a dislocated left ankle in 2024, obviously had a lot of injury complications. He's going to be 30 years old. He missed a ton of games in 2025 and did not look like himself. I will say, though, I felt like there were still slivers of his game, maybe some hints that maybe there still is that great player underneath. I'm not that sure, though. It was very inconsistent. And man, your charting absolutely laid that out. His success rates versus man and zone were shockingly low. 58% success rate versus man, 69% success rate versus zone. We're talking 16th percentile and 6th percentile respectively. What do we have here in Chris Godwin?
I'm hoping it's not the beginning of a sad story here for Chris Godwin, but you know, because this is one of my all-time favorite players. This obviously predates even the website's founding, you know, which we started the site and the business in 2021, James. You know, we started this show not long after that. But Chris Godwin was one of my favorites in the 2017 class. I linked this in his profile, like some of my evaluations on Godwin from a reception perception standpoint. I thought he was a first round pick. He goes in the third round. Obviously, I think he ended up proving me. I've had my misses over the years when it comes to prospecting, but he definitely, I think, proved me right in the long run. He was an awesome player over multiple offensive systems. He's been really good as a boundary player. He's been an excellent power. So, I mean, again, he's like one of the founding fathers of one of my favorite archetypes of receivers as like the bigger slot options. Sure, so this is one of my favorite players, but I mean, it is just tough to ignore that the 2025 results were really poor. As you mentioned, coming off of a dislocated left ankle, and he had to undergo two surgeries to correct the issue. He suited up in week four and then ultimately missed games after that due to compensation. So that is, of course, like a massive, massive, massive caveat. When we're talking about what Chris Godwin was last year, it didn't look great as he was coming back from a major injury. I honestly don't even know if that is a surprise, really. The question is just like, what is next for a guy who is now 30 years old, has been in the league since 2017. He's been in the league almost 10 years. He did come in really young, which is why, he's only now 30 years old. But at the same time, like, what's the next step here for Godwin? Because this is the second like major injury he's come back from, which is a shame because I mean, the 2024 charting was probably the best of his career. He was off to an unbelievable start in Liam Cohen's offense, number two in fantasy points per game in the first 7 weeks behind only Jamar Chase. I mean, he was having an unbelievable season. He picks up this second major injury of his career, and I just don't know what we have now at this point. Because as you mentioned, a lot of poor results across the board from a success rate standpoint. This is a guy in Chris Godwin. If from 2018 to 2024, he averaged a 73.5% success rate versus man, 72.5% against press. If you remove the 2022 season, which was the year he was coming back from that torn ACL that happened late in 2021, those numbers both jump up to 75%. So we're talking about when he's at his best, this is a guy you could just reliably say, average it out, he's going to be about 75% against man and press, clear to 80% success rate versus zone in multiple seasons, including that 2024 season. And now we're talking about 58% against man, 69% against zone, and 65% against press. So I mean, that's just major drop-offs across the board. He doesn't look anything like himself from a separation standpoint. Also had some issues at the catch point last year, too. Dropped some passes you wouldn't expect from him. One of the lower contested catch rates of his career, 66.7%. He has multiple seasons over 81%. He has like a 93% mark from 2020 from a contested catch rate standpoint.
Wow.
And I've talked to some evaluators who believe that you start to kind of see a wideout when they lose their lower, like to start to lose explosion in their lower body. They start to have misfires at the catch point first and foremost. Like that's where you sort of start to see it. Just like your body's all out of whack. Like we forget this is, I made this point when we're talking about like Roma Dunze, who had some drops and stuff even before his foot injury, but it's like, well, he didn't hurt his hands. He didn't hurt his hands, hurt his feet. But it's like your whole body's working in concert as an athlete. So again, I think there's some, that's just a theory that I've heard other people express, but I at least thought of that while I was working on Chris Godwin because of some of those catch point issues.
All right. So again, we're entering into 2026 here. In 2025, it was sort of a lost season. That being said, he ran an unbelievable amount of inbreakers in this offense, right? Like dig at nearly 19% curl, 15% slant at 25%, nearly 60% route participation on those three routes alone. I am anticipating he has a similar role here for Tampa Bay in 2026. What do you see in terms of a role and fit perspective into this offense?
Yeah, he took a little bit less in terms of a percentage standpoint snaps in the slot. As the year went on, he played a lot more in the slot. Of course, we know Tampa Bay was dealing with a lot of wide receiver injuries last year, but on the whole, in his RP sample, he was in the slot on 47% of his snaps. He had previous seasons between 53% and 63% from 19 to 2022. I would kind of expect and maybe hope that he gets back up to that like 50 to 60% range. And I think that's really possible with the guys that they currently have on the roster. And I've mentioned this before, but Zach Robinson's offense in 2024 at the Atlanta Falcons, they were able to get everybody slot reps, all of their top receiving options, top four target getters. If you look at tight ends and wide receivers, they all had a slot rate over 39% on passing plays in that 2024 season. So I think Godwin probably sees more work in the slot. And I think that is definitely something at this point he needs. Get him a runway, get him rolling, because he's still pretty good after the catch. Like, that was one thing I saw last year did not diminish. He was in space on 45% of his sample catches, went down on first contact on just 46% of those plays. So definitely can still rumble with the football in his hands. He's a big body, really powerful player as well, even if he's at least last season wasn't as explosive as he used to be. And I think that makes sense, because think about the rest of this room. You've got Emeka Ibuka, who is dealing with a toe injury right now, but I think we'll probably be fine once we get into the regular season. At least maybe he's a little banged up for the first few games, but in the long run, I think he'll be fine as that Z receiver. We've talked about that a lot on this show, that we now expect Ibuka, after playing X as a rookie, is going to move off ball and be the Z, move around the formation here, get some, essentially be playing in what Drake London's role was for the Atlanta Falcons.
All right.
You know, other people have said like, oh, yeah, Cooper Kupp, all that. Yeah, totally. But I mean, the best example I think we'll probably see is Drake London with the Atlanta Falcons. And he ran a lot of in-breaking routes, right? And at the same time, like, so did all the other guys, because that's what this offense wants to do. They want to attack over the middle of the field, which is why Michael Penix was such a weird fit in this offense when they drafted him. But I digress. So I think Godwin will be that on-ball slot receiver. I think he'll help a lot in the run game. And Ibuka will be the movement Z, off-ball, kick into the slot sometimes. Those two guys will work in combination. And then we'll see essentially like Ted Hurst, or more likely Jalen McMillan, be the X receiver and be the vertical stretch player for this offense.
By the way, Matt Harmon has had an incredible run with Penn State wide receivers and being ahead of the game. Allen Robinson, well, Chris Godwin. What? Were you a little ahead of consensus on Parker Washington? No.
Well, yeah, but you're forgetting one name that went in the first round that I was ahead of consensus on, a Penn State wide receiver.
I have no idea.
Jahan Dotson. I mean, come on.
Oh.
So, 3 for 4?
Are you talking about Super Bowl winning wide receiver?
Super Bowl legend. You can't take it away from a Super Bowl hero. Bounce back is happening this year. You know, it's funny. Like, I still obviously do have the candle lit for Jahan Dotson, which I know everybody makes fun of me for, and they should make fun of me for it. It's really tough to get excited about, like, the fourth receiving option on the Atlanta Falcons based on how Tua has played. So I'm a full on Michael Penix guy at this point, you know,
wearing on my sleeve. I just don't. I'm so confused by Stefanski, you know, like, really good offensive mind. Why go to Atlanta and then say, you know what, I need me some Tua Tagovailoa in my life. Why?
Because he's cheap.
And then also, why go to a team that drafted a quarterback who doesn't want to play from under center? Like, you just went through this with Deshaun Watson, dog. Like, what are you doing?
I know there's only 32 of these jobs, brother, but that's a guy that should have taken a year off, you know?
Yeah, man. We're talking about two-time coach of the year. Like, you trust me, the opportunities will be there at some point, bro. Like, man, I do not. And that's the thing, right? Like, if he messes this one up in Atlanta, and it's not looking good right now. Like, if he messes this one up in Atlanta, all right, well, then what are we doing? We're going back to the freaking OC role? Like, what are we doing? I'm so confused, man. I don't know who is advising Kevin Stefanski, but I wish I could advise him, you know? Like, let me help you out, homie. Let me help you out.
Yeah. I mean, I feel you. That somebody should. But yeah, just real quick to another wide receiver from Penn State that I missed on was Deshaun Hamilton. Oh man, I thought Deshaun Hamilton was an awesome route runner coming to the NFL in that 2018 draft. He had a couple of moments for the Broncos, but never really amounted to anything.
Was he a small dude? I don't know.
He was like a slot only man. He was like a man cover. He's definitely a Matt Harmon Felford again, a contender. But yeah, I mean, he was like a really good route runner, slot player. He went in the fourth round, I want to say. He went to high school in Stafford, Virginia. So yeah, not that anyone cares about that, but you know, near where I grew up, actually. 6'1", 206. Yeah, Mount View High School in Stafford, Virginia. So, Deshaun didn't really work out for Deshaun Hamilton. He had 243 receiving yards, 297 receiving yards, and 293 receiving yards very consistent for the Denver Broncos there. just didn't amount to what I thought was going to be a really good player in the NFL. So, there's definitely some misses. I think there's been some other Penn State receivers, you know, that I've definitely been wrong about. But yeah, Godwin, Allen Robinson, Jahan Dotson, for a minute there, I was like, Josh Gattis, their wide receiver coach, he's gone on to coach other places. I was like, man, this guy is really cooking with some of these receiver prospects.
There you go. All right, there you go. Well, we'll just ignore the Deshaun Hamilton. It's fine. And we're still going to give you a win for Super Bowl winning wide receiver Jahan Dotson as well.
I feel like we can't give me a win for that. We just really
can I also, first of all, if I can lessen the blow here and make a case that why it should be a win. Dude, his first year, he was a fire, bro. Like his rookie season, he was gangbusters.
Yeah. I'll let you say that. Okay. I mean, I listen.
What, didn't he have like 10 touchdowns or something? I don't have his numbers in front
he
of me.
He had a lot of, touchdowns.
Like a crazy amount.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, I get it. It's hard for me to relive this experience with Jahan Dotson because I still am like, yeah, mystified of why it didn't work out because I really thought he had a nice season. I thought he did.
He had 7 touchdowns his rookie campaign and 516.
And was solid as an NFL reception player too. So, yeah. I gotta look. There's definitely been there's someone I'm forgetting that's been a Penn State receiver recently, and now I can't remember my eval on them. But whatever, nobody cares.
Who cares? All right, we're moving on. Trey Tucker there in Las Vegas, I think, is one of the most intriguing players out there.
Well, can we close actually before we move on to Trey Tucker? Can we close the loop on Godwin? Do you think what do you think happens next? Like, do you think is it over for Godwin?
You know what's funny? I actually think he's going to have a really nice bounce back season. I think he's going to have a really, I don't know why this is, I don't have anything for it other than just gut feeling. And like I started the whole Godwin process, the conversation, I said, man, I saw at different times, like him reach into the Wayback Machine and like he looked like the old Godwin. Now he didn't do it consistently, but I still saw that player in there. I didn't think that he was just toasty toast, man. So I don't, like I said, I have no reason other than just gut feeling that I think that Godwin's going to have a really nice bounce back season. We are an extra year removed away from the ankle injury, which again, if I'm trying to like grasp at straws, I would kind of sort of look at that. I think, you know, and again, I think he's also the kind of veteran, smart, wily player that I think somebody like Baker Mayfield could lean on to.
Yep, I think that's fair. And I'm definitely, again, willing to sort of hold out some hope for Godwin here because we are another year removed from that injury. Yeah. But man, it's just the results were so not encouraging last season.
They were bad. They were really bad.
Oh no, totally. I thought the film really was really bad. Discouraging. I really did. Yeah. But it's like it was a devastating and complicated injury that he was coming back from. But you know, I think here's I guess the expectation for Godwin. I think he can come back and have a solid role playing season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers this year, especially because I do believe in that offensive ecosystem overall. I'm actually pretty high on what Zach Robinson is going to do, at least in the passing game. This is an offensive line that is pretty badass in Tampa Bay right now when everybody is healthy. That has me encouraged. I think Baker is healthy and motivated, looking trim, by the way, in training camp. Wonder what the Baker Mayfield diet is at this point. That's on my radar. Ibuka, I think, can really take the next step. I think they've got some nice complimentary receivers. You know, Cade Otton's good. Like, this is an offense that's really good on paper as long as everybody can stay healthy, which nobody did last season. And to be fair, we've already have what I think is going to be the best receiver on the team is currently dealing with an injury. So that is totally fair. But yeah, like, I like the play caller. I like the quarterback when he's healthy for, you know, to some degree. I like the offensive line a lot. They got a good deep group of skill position players. I think that Godwin could come in here and have a solid season for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but I would be surprised if we like truly turn back the clock, essentially.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
Like I think it's probably, I think I wrote this in the profile. I think we've almost certainly seen, you know, the best days of what's been an excellent NFL player.
1,000 yards doable?
No. Probably not. I think probably not. I think maybe like a 2025 Keenan Allen type of season for Chris Godwin, where he's reliable on third down. He's good in the short and intermediate areas, but he has, you know, 80 something catches for 700, 800 yards. I think that is doable for Chris Godwin, which again would be a bounce back off of what was really just a disastrous season last year. But again, I tend to doubt like high volume, 1,000 yards. But I'll be honestly, if I'm wrong, I will love to see it because I think Chris Godwin is an awesome player by all accounts, an incredible dude off the field as well.
I've always dreamed of being able to order my coffee in Italian like a local instead of just pointing at the menu and hoping for the best. There's something about speaking another language with real confidence that opens up a whole new world of experiences. That's why I'm so excited about Rosetta Stone Sapphire. It's their biggest launch in over a decade. It takes that research-backed method we all know and trust and adds fresh, cutting-edge features that make it easier than ever to go from knowing a few phrases to speaking naturally about the topics you actually care about. What I love is that you aren't just memorizing vocabulary lists. You learn entirely in your new language through visuals and audio, just like you did as a kid. One of my favorite new features is chat missions. It turns conversation practice into a game, putting you in real-world scenarios, like ordering at a restaurant or asking for directions, and giving you missions to complete. You get real-time feedback along the way, so you build that confidence before you ever have to use your skills in the real world. If you want to take your language skills to the next level, don't wait to try Rosetta Stone Sapphire. Listeners of this podcast can get 20% off their Rosetta Stone Sapphire subscription when they sign up today. This gets you access to Rosetta Stone Sapphire in 25 languages. Visit rosettastone.com/rs10 to redeem your 20% off. That's rosettastone.com/rs10.
At DSW, we ask the important questions, like, what shoes are you going to wear? Whether you're prepping for wedding season, festival season, or just planning the ultimate vacay, the right shoes can make or break an RSVP. So own the moment. You've got big plans, and we've got just the shoes. At the perfect price, of course. Get ready to get ready with Designer Shoe Warehouse. Head to your DSW store or DSW.com today, and let us surprise you.
A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between thinking about photography school and selling your portraits online. It's the difference between giving away those cookies you just made for free and running your cookie empire. A beautifully designed Squarespace website is the difference between having a movie reviewing hobby and a movie reviewing career. Squarespace, because no matter what you're into, a website makes it real. Use offer code THEDIFFERENCE for 30% off every plan. Terms and conditions apply.
Okay, we move on to Las Vegas. Trey Tucker, interesting mix of routes for this guy. And I was honestly a little bit surprised. I thought this guy was going to be like a, I don't know, like one of these, like, you know, flat, you know, screen type and then nine route dudes. And not the case, man. This is somebody who had six different routes with more than 10% route participation. And like I said, way fewer flats and screens than I was anticipating here. Trey Tucker, the charting was completely and utterly different than what I was expecting, Matt.
Yeah, especially the route percentage standpoint, I think is what you're referencing in there in terms of the balance of what he did. Like he ran every route except the flat route at or above an NFL average rate. So one of these really, really balanced route trees. And that's one of my first signs of optimism, I think, for Trey Tucker this year, is that I think that is going to completely change for him. I actually think you could look at his success rate by route chart, which everybody, of course, should go to the website and check out the full profile, check out the charts. I think that this route success rate chart is going to much more lean into the routes that he runs well, the big breaking routes. I mean, the three routes that he had, he ran at pretty high volume and had some good success. Nine post dig. Mm-hmm. That's going to be a pretty heavy diet for Trey Tucker this upcoming season in Clint Kubiak's offense. Like, the TLDR take on Trey Tucker is, I think he fits this offense really well. Like, he fits the route concepts that this offense wants off of play action, the big breaking routes, you know, get a really fast dude to run these big breaking routes off play action after we establish the run, the whole deal, and like really cook in the downfield area. I mean, I am by far not saying that Trey Tucker is going to do a Jackson Smith and Jigba this year, but don't forget that, you know, Trey Tucker, like we said, post route, dig route, pretty solid success rates. They are 78% on the post, 77% on the dig while running those at decent volume. I mean, that was an awful lot of where JSN was cooking last season, on those downfield plays, even like Torrey Horton making some of those plays at the beginning of the season for the Seattle Seahawks last year, where obviously Clint Kubiak was. But that's sort of the jump to the end on Trey Tucker, like the take on him. But yeah, a very interesting profile to just fully unpack here.
Yeah, 78.9. So 77% dig route success rate, which again, I just was really surprised by that. I was anticipating him being good on the nine route, 64% success rate on the nine. But man, I was surprised by how well he ran the dig. And that was an area that you highlighted in the profile as well.
Yeah, and we've kind of buried the lead here for Trey Tucker. My colleague at Nate Tice noted this last season, heading into last year, noted that if you looked at like the next gen stats mile per hour tracking data, not just like who hits the top speed, you know, when they're running on the open field, you know, whatever, but like actually how often they hit 20 miles an hour, this like certain thresholds. I linked the clip in the profile. People can go back and watch it. Like Trey Tucker is legitimately one of, if not the fastest players in the NFL. Like, and that is not an exaggeration based on the miles per hour data. And the charting really backs it up, right? Like, we're talking about nine routes, post routes. I mean, this guy can, if you give him a free release, he can cook down the field. This is an explosive, fast player. And I do think, like, the best stuff that he does are those breaking routes against zone coverage in particular. 44th percentile success rate versus zone. You know, we can work with that, okay? A guy who's going to face a lot of zone coverage. The league is very zone coverage heavy. Now, obviously, not the best success rate versus man or press coverage. We're talking 19th and 20th percentile success rate versus press for a guy who is a primary outside receiver. Z receiver for the most part, 63% snaps off the ball, outside on 81% of his sampled snaps. Like, yeah, this is definitely a guy that is an outside receiver, doesn't get used in motion a decent bit, but is mostly a Z receiver. So I think we'll see a lot of Trey Tucker this year, though, for the Raiders. I thought it was really notable over the weekend that Clint Kubiak said they're still searching for answers in that wide receiver room. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but so they're still looking for answers at the wide receiver room. And Jalen Naylor played in the game with the backups, and Trey Tucker did not. He was arrested for that game. I thought that was interesting. And
it is interesting.
I think right now I would take Tucker over Jalen Naylor as the outside receiver for this team. I think Naylor's got, you know, some decent stuff to his game, but Tucker's ability to crack open deep zones on these post and dig routes, I think, is more valuable to what this offense wants to do.
It doesn't feel like they have an X receiver on this unit, right? Like, Jalen Naylor's been primarily a, you know, Z slot guy throughout his entirety of his career. I don't think he can reliably play outside for you. Trey Tucker has given you some of these traits, but as you mentioned, not really good, and as a matter of fact, bad against man press coverage, which is a skill set you need as an X receiver. You look at the roster, Jack Besh.
Big slot.
Big slot guy.
That's how he's been used in the preseason, which I think is right for Besh. Like, he needs this is that's the role that needs to be 11 personnel, slot receiver only. I don't think that what we've seen from he just can't. Besh like can get open against man press coverage, but only in the short, you know, in intermediate areas. He's this has been the case for him, even dating back to his good prospect profile. He cannot win down the football field, and you simply like cannot have a primary X receiver who can't stress the defense deep.
Yeah. So again, I just look at the roster, Matt, and I don't see a guy. You know, I know Malik Benson has made some preseason noise here. It's funny,
didn't
man.
Have
like
a good
I've
game
heard
something.
I have heard absolutely nothing in regards to Dante Thornton.
Same
as well.
I don't even know if he's gonna make the roster.
Yeah, you know. So again, it's a brand new regime in Las Vegas. Their wide receivers, The I'm telling you, the wide receiver room itself just does not look good. It's not deep and it's not complete.
Yeah, I think ideally, I mean, again, we're talking about Tucker. Ideally, this is your number three receiver in the NFL. I think based on who Jack Besh is, like, he's a guy who could maybe handle more targets than a Trey Tucker ideally, but not the downfield. Like, Tucker is going to be one of those guys. And this is why, I mean, if you're doing like best ball drafts, definitely you know, move Tucker up your board a little bit, because I think he's going to be on the field the most of these wide receivers. Because, I mean, we're talking about, like, this is a team that wants to run the ball and wants to give up as many targets as possible to Brock Bowers, a guy who can legitimately open up the field underneath. He's going to be Tucker. This is the reason he didn't play in the preseason. Like, this is going to be the guy that takes the most snaps at the wide receiver position again this year. But ideally, this is your number three receiver who's like a high, low target, high yield type of player for this team, which he kind of has been so far in the NFL, you know, this season, in the NFL. I mean, last season, he was on the field a ton, 896 snaps. That was the ninth most at the wide receiver position last year. He had 696 yards and five touchdowns, three of which came in one game against the Washington Commanders. You know, a lot of that production happened in that one game. I mean, that's going to happen, I think, for Tucker this year, but I believe in the offensive infrastructure and his fit in this offense and what the route tree probably looks like for him a little bit more than what we saw last year. So I think Tucker actually can have a nice season for the Raiders. But again, ideally, this is your number three receiver. I think what you hope to happen here, if you're the Raiders, is you hope, I mean, you don't hope that you're going to be bad. Nobody hopes that they're going to be bad, but somebody's got to be bad, right? You hope that you get kind of this, what I'm talking about, high yield, low target, solid season from Trey Tucker. You know, Jack Besh has some nice moments as a big slot chain mover, whatever. Brock Bowers is obviously awesome. Your run game is good. And then next year you draft in the top 10 and you take a great receiver prospect, you know, and that's your number one. And then it's like, oh boy, now we're looking pretty good. Tucker is a free agent at the end of the year. So, I mean, I don't know what, in my hypothetical scenario, is he back with the team next season? You know, you gave Jalen Naylor a decent contract. Yeah. That's what I mean.
Yeah, I can't do that.
But yeah, I don't know. That's definitely something to consider here. I think that's like the ideal situation. The long story short, the Raiders are not going to have a number one receiver this year. They might not even have like a number two receiver this year. But they, I do think, have between Tucker, Naylor, and Besh, guys who fit in certain roles. Tucker is just the most interesting one because he can really rip it downfield, and this offense is going to want to push it downfield on play action.
I mean, he's the only one. He's literally the only guy that can get open downfield. It's just a weird, man, it's just such a weird mix of players, honestly. You've got Trey Tucker, Jalen Naylor, Jack Besh. I mean, you could make the case that all three of those guys basically play the same position, or at least the same area of the field, right? Like Trey Tucker, I know, could get downfield, but he's got to be off ball. Like, he's, you know what I mean? Like, he's going to be playing that Z slot. Jalen Naylor is going to be in the slot. Jack Besh is Z slot. It's a weird mix of wide receivers. And when you're talking about a rookie quarterback, I don't think they did him any favors here in regards to that. So I don't know, man. We'll find out. I think, by the way, where are you at with Kirk Cousins? I think his arm is toast. He looks like he is just about as prepackaged lettuce as it comes. Like, we're talking triple washed.
Yeah, he was like okay for the Falcons at the end of last year, but he's another year older. I don't think we'll see Kirk very long. I think we'll see Mendoza in short order. And the fact that, I mean, he definitely has not had a perfect preseason. There are some operational things that he needs to get together. He's not had a lot of experience taking snaps under center. Response to pressure can be a little iffy at times. But, I mean, he's definitely had some good moments, especially getting under center and pushing the ball over the middle of the field.
Yeah.
I would just start him sooner than later. I wouldn't worry about, you know, what's the right time to start him. Like, what's a good moment on the schedule? I think you start Kirk for a little bit and you eventually turn it over to Mendoza. But there's just been such a loud drumbeat from the Raiders and media members connected to the Raiders that say, like, they want to wait as long as possible. And I think Kirk can probably for about a month or so maybe be just good enough to keep them from wanting to start Mendoza. But I would say before Halloween, the rookie's under center.
I don't know, man. I think they're going to wait. I think they're going to wait till week 8, it looks like. Because, again, they've got this stretch, like an unbelievably brutal stretch where they're playing KC. They're on the road against New England. They're playing Buffalo. Then they play the LA Rams. No thanks. And then in week 8, they go on the road and play the Jets. So that feels like the right spot.
I get it. I totally hear your point. But yes. I was having this conversation with Ryan Fitzpatrick, not to name drop here, but I was having this conversation with Ryan Fitzpatrick last week. And my point to him was, like, Dude, remember when we did this when about Drake May and we like people did this about Drake May? Like, you can't, his first start came against the Texans. There were people like, you can't start Drake May against the Houston Texans as if like one bad game, his first is going to ruin his entire career. Drake May started against the Texans. He lived to tell the tale. And yeah. Then he was playing in the damn Super Bowl the next season. So,
I mean, yes, I hear you, Matt, but I think we can all agree Drake May as a prospect is more highly regarded than Fernando Mendoza.
I would make an argument that this Raiders offense might be better than that Patriots offense, though. I mean, I'll take Kubiak over Van Pelt.
Yeah, you're right.
I think the receivers are kind of a wash, if not maybe the Raiders are a little bit. I mean, they're not playing. Well, we'll see who. I guess we'll see who the Raiders are playing at X receiver, but they won't be playing Jalen Polk at X receiver. The receiver's probably a wash. This team has Brock Bowers. I think this team's run game will be better. Offensive line will almost certainly be better. I think that part of it is probably a fate. I mean, listen, yeah, they could put Mendoza out there against the Rams and they'll probably lose, 40-7 or whatever, but it won't kill him in the long run.
Well, the only thing I would say, the Texans one was really good, but do you really want Mendoza to make his first start against Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald, man? Like, it doesn't feel good, dude, you know?
It's one game over what you're hoping is hundreds and hundreds. I think we overthink this. Just play him whenever it feels right. And okay, that's he'll probably survive.
Fair. I just Myles Garrett and Aaron Donald though, bro.
That is pretty tough. I mean, that is tough.
I will. Yeah. Okay. So week 8 it is for me. I'm gonna predict it here. I'll say week 8, November 1st will be his first start, Mendoza.
And I'll go ahead and predict now that the receiver lineup, I would say it should be, Tucker takes the most snaps. Like when they go to heavy personnel, he'll be on the field because he's a vertical guy.
Yeah, for sure.
And then I think he is the primary Z receiver like he was last year. And Jalen Naylor actually ends up taking some X receiver work. Naylor, at least his best stuff was against man coverage last year, 68% success rate versus man, 47th percentile. You compare that to Trey Tucker, 59.6% success rate versus man, said 19th percentile. One of his better routes was a 9 route. Out route success rate was good for Jalen Naylor. And then Besh is on the field as the big slot when they go to 11 personnel. And I think they can do some really interesting stuff, like almost inverting Besh and Bowers, because Besh is like a good blocker. He's had some good blocking reps in the preseason, so I think that's probably how the way it goes. And then Malik Benson is like essentially Trey Tucker's backup, is kind of how they've run him out in the preseason so far.
Okay, all right, well, we'll see. We shall see. All right, go to receptionperception.com. By the way, by the time you listen to this episode, there will be a handful of new running back profiles on the site, the best of the best. We're talking Jahmyr Gibbs. We're talking Bijan Robinson. Christian McCaffrey has a really interesting profile that will be on the site as well. So go check it out. Receptionperception.com, quarterback info, running back info, and of course, all the best wide receiver info that you will find in human existence from our guy, Matt Harmon. All right, we got to go. For Matt Harmon, I'm James Kell. We'll see you, but remember, it's never too late to chase your dreams. All right, peace.